Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Oh, taste and see how gracious the Lord is, by Ralph Vaughan Williams, one of the many beautiful pieces sung this morning at the funeral of Queen Elizabeth II, and a hymn originally composed for the Queen's coronation in 1953. So as the Queen's coffin was lowered into the crypt below, which seemed to, for the first time, bring visible emotion to her family, what closing thoughts are there on her reign as she leaves the world stage? Royal historian and author Tracy Borman is here. Hi, Tracy.
Hello.
We know volumes are going to be written about this, but just some brief thoughts now. What do you think we saw? Was it the last gasps of monarchy, or a triumphant reminder of what sacrifice, devotion, fierce upper lips, ritual can do to strengthen a country?
I think it was more the latter. And I think it was very much twofold. Throughout the day, there was a celebration and a giving thanks for the extraordinarily long reign of Elizabeth II, during which, you know, she gave unstinting duty and service. We've heard those two words a lot in the last 10 days or so. But running alongside that, emphasized very, very clearly, was the continuity of monarchy. You know, it's almost like there's no interruption in business here. We're remembering the late Queen. We're also marking the accession of her successor, King Charles III. So I think it was a display, actually, of the strength of the institution of monarchy. I think it's looking in pretty good shape after today.
Well, let's get to that, but stay with service. Here's a radio address Elizabeth made at the age of 26, her coronation day.
I have in sincerity pledged myself to your service, as so many of you are pledged to mine. Throughout all my life and with all my heart, I shall strive to be worthy of your trust.
And Tracy, today we heard over and over from the speakers, rarely was a pledge so well kept. Another said, it's hard to find people of service, harder still to find leaders of service. Now, she had her critics. She was profoundly wealthy. But is this a part of what people saw? Her steadfast kind of denial of herself.
I think that's absolutely right. And it's interesting that the Times newspaper at the very beginning of her reign predicted that the future brilliance of a monarch would be their staying power, their self-sacrifice, and their service. And I think that was quite a good prediction, because that's what we're judging Elizabeth II by. And they're not the dramatic qualities that we're used to seeing in the history of the British crown. Here you don't have a monarch who married six times, or the Virgin Queen, or any of those other big personalities from history. But it was the very lack of drama that I think was the secret to the late Queen's success.
Well, on her part, but she was surrounded by scandals. I mean, she was brutally criticized for not realizing soon enough how much the country loved Diana after her death. She came out quickly as if to acknowledge she'd made a mistake. How much people felt angry at her son Charles for his flagrant affair with his now wife during his marriage to Diana. She fired Prince Andrew after claims of inappropriate behavior about him. Prince Harry, Meghan Markle, said the family was racist. She did, though, manage to keep that family together.
She did, and you're absolutely right in that the greatest crises of the Queen's reign involved members of her family, not the Queen herself. And it was an incredibly difficult balance to strike, I think, between, you know, upholding that privacy, which was her instinct. It was once said that you can't let daylight in on magic. You can't give the public too much. But at the same time, she did learn that she had to respond to the public. And you rightly illustrate there the point about Princess Diana and when the Queen's instinct was to stay at Balmoral and to keep the princes there and protect them. It might have been the right instinct for a grandmother, but as Queen, something else was required. Yeah. And she responded to that.
Well, briefly, she also never apologized for Britain's brutal history of colonialism, the violent put-down of the Mau Mau in Kenya, you know, comes to mind. Should she have?
It's really tricky. I think the Queen always did the best thing, both in her eyes and in the eyes of the monarchy. And what she did was just to focus on what she could do on her service and on her duty. Mm-hmm. And I think she'll ultimately be judged by that, as well as, of course, by her sheer longevity.
Well, and the memories people have. You know, we saw the riderless horse. We saw the corgis at the gate. Mm. We learned that her bagpipe, she had a personal bagpiper who played for her for 15 minutes every morning at Balmoral, whether she was there or not. Her pocketbook over her arm, even though what is a queen carrying? All of this, I'm sure, will stay with you. Royal historian and author Tracy Borman. Tracy, we'll talk to you more about King Charles as he ascends. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. A momentous day.